Hey guys, welcome to Geek Nerd Tech, the weekly show where we break down all the tech news and all the tech cool stuff coming out of Silicon Valley and all over the world. Before we get started, I do want to tell you about one of our sponsors, which is DICE. Let me tell you a little about it. DICE is a leading tech career hub. It's a champion for technology professionals and citizens of the tech community, providing career opportunities, insights, and advice. With over 70,000 tech jobs on DICE, it's the best place to be, and it's the best place to be seen. DICE is truly an advocate for technology professionals as they navigate their careers, arming them with tools to achieve their full potential. You know, you might be very fluent in a lot of these tech skills, and you don't really know where to go to find a job, or maybe you do, but you're not really happy with your current job. DICE is kind of the place to help hook you up with that career. Let's talk about, like, you know, the tech world is a great place to really have a stable income. So let's talk about salaries real quick. You know, like, you want to make sure you're getting paid what you're worth. So how do you kind of decide what your worth is going to be? Well, luckily, DICE.com or their mobile app, you can get salary estimates based on your specific skill set and location, so you know that in your area you should be getting a competitive pay rate, so you know exactly what you're worth. We can also shed light on, like, what skills you could learn to increase your earning potential and by how much to really set you up for success. They've been connecting tech pros and job opportunities for over 20 years. Now they're a full-blown career hub delivering the tools and resources you need to manage your career. There's over 70,000 tech jobs ranging from software development, UX, project management, and more. There's a tremendous amount of insights around the job market and skills that are hot and, you know, ones that are, you know, not so hot right now. You know, they'll let you know, and that way you can kind of form a great opinion and really know, you know, make an educated decision based on the actual job market instead of just guessing. They also give you salary reports and tools to really understand how you're stacking up against other people in your, you know, your career. DICE is your advocate for navigating your career, whether that means finding your next job, getting your next pay raise, or informing your next career move. So even if you already have a job, DICE is a great place to figure out, okay, how can you set yourself apart and make sure that you are developing the skills that, you know, are needed to grow in this ever-growing tech market. You know, every week we do this show and we talk about all these new tools that are coming out for people who are in this industry. You know, like, DICE is going to keep you up to speed on, you know, the trending ones that, you know, companies are going to want and they're going to expect you to know. You'll be ahead of the curve with DICE, you know. So learn more at DICE.com/CanYouHackIt. Again, that's DICE.com/CanYouHackIt. That's all one word, DICE.com/CanYouHackIt. And, you know, hack your career with DICE, because that's what we're about here at Geek Nerd Tech, is we're about getting the news out there and letting you guys know about all the cool new things coming in the tech world. And DICE.com is one of those cool things. So if you're really interested, you guys, please go check it out. It helps us out. Now, let's talk about the show.
Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech on Black Hollywood Live. Today, a new ransomware attack is happening. Some more details in the Star Wars Han Solo firing and Google and Facebook's hits 2 billion users. Let's go.
You are tuned into Black Hollywood Live's Geek Nerd Tech.
Just like the blah, something about the blah.
Man, he's just jacking up all these songs.
Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech, the show where we break down tech news and nerd culture from a black and brown geek perspective. I'm Joe Braswell, or Joe Mac. 1,000 degrees. I'm joined alongside by Keely, flavoring the ear shine.
Keely flavoring it, yeah, yes, man. How you doing? Craig Mack in the building. Craig, I'm good, Mack. Man. I'm good.
Good. As I said last time, Craig Mack, Busta Rhymes' brother.
I know,
little known fact.
That's right.
Little known hip hop fact. Where's Craig Mack these days?
Man, where's Busta these days?
I saw Busta like.
Well, he did some BET award stuff too, I believe.
Oh, did he?
Well, I mean, I saw him out and about. Okay, that's what I mean. Like,
I saw him at the Anderson .Paak concert.
Where
he came out,
he performed.
He did like a couple lines.
Oh, that's what's up.
I mean, he could use couple less burgers.
Oh, yeah. You got to get back in the gym.
I mean, you know. Yeah. But anyway, he's still busting rhymes. Still got the energy.
Anywho, well, I mean, I got a question for you. You know, yes, off sir. Topic, but Craig Mack, obviously, Bad Boy Family. a great time for music. Were you a fan of the whole Bad Boy situation?
That's a good question. So I'm trying to like give myself some perspective on that, where I was at the time versus where I am right now. And I feel like, I guess it has to be a yes. I feel like I liked the music. I didn't necessarily like the movement. I was never really
like the culture.
I was never really a Diddy guy, Farnsworth. Like, I mean, all, you know, the whole. I mean, you know, the whole Bad Boy fan. But I did like the Family album.
Of course,
that one's classic, classic, classic. I mean,
you're obviously a Biggie fan.
All the Biggie stuff's fantastic. I just remember laughing.
Were you not a Mace fan?
I mean. A Mace fan is pretty strong. That's like saying you're a Ringo fan.
No. I mean, Mace is hard, homie.
Mace was cool.
All right.
But I'm
Harlem
saying,
World.
I mean, are you riding for Mace?
Mace was hard, bro. I'm not, like, no argument. Mace was dope.
Okay. I'm not mad at Mace at all.
Hey, I don't know.
It's like I said. It's like, I can't say, I don't dislike. That's like saying, like, ask me if I'm a... I don't know. It's just difficult. But yeah, I think I like everything about the Bad Boy. I just remember during the time, me just really to this day, and even back in '95, like Diddy's like, that's right,
and like come, all in the videos,
yeah, exactly, dancing. But all of his like, ooh, with some when Biggie with when Big would say something, but yeah, I don't know, and then His MC skills are suspect.
Yeah.
But serviceable.
Oh, without question. I mean, you compare him to some of the mumble rap we're hearing today.
Sure.
Like,
oh, yeah. No, so he's killing
it
right now.
I appreciate it, exactly.
And then last but not least, as always with a lot of these folks, the production credits. Like, what, you know, is the executive producer versus the actual hands-on producer?
Yeah, but that can go for any big-name producer. So, I mean, if you're going to put that criticism on him, you got to put that criticism on Dr. Dre,
sure,
on Timbaland, on any of those guys that's making major hits.
Not Pharrell.
So, Pharrell, you don't think Pharrell had an assistant?
Yeah, an assistant.
Or like an intern or...
But that's different for me than like, I got an idea. I wanted to kind of go something like, boo, boo, boo. I'll be right back. Hey, come in. How we do? That's not it. I'll be right back. Yeah, that's it. That's a hit.
All right.
That's different.
Okay, I see your point.
You know, I don't know. Anyway, we completely digress. But while we're digressing, what I didn't put up on here on the rundown, what Lola didn't put on the rundown, I should say, is BET Awards. Thoughts, reflections. I mean, it is like, you know, Black Oscars, as some people call it. Like, descended in Los Angeles. It took over Black Twitter. It took over everything. It took over Twitter. Like it just dominated the news, the feeds on the night, the days leading up to. There's events. There's part of this BET experience.
Hey, there's it's like almost like a mini conference.
Yep.
You got, you know, people doing talks, mm-hmm. all sorts of stuff. I mean, I think it was great. Like, I think I wouldn't go as far as call it the Black Oscars, but I get the fact that, you know, we kill the charts musically. Like, we are pushing culture forward internationally, as we always have done. So, I mean, definitely all eyes is on, you know, BET for this moment. I think, you know, Jesse Collins Entertainment did a good job putting it together. I think some of the performances were cool. I think some were like, whatever.
Give me your whatevers. Give me your cools. Who smashed?
Wait, who smashed?
Who killed it?
I liked when Kendrick came out.
Yeah.
I think that was a smasher to me. What about you?
I think Bruno kills.
I mean, he opened it pretty well. Kills. He always kills.
Sea Breezy is, I mean, it's a fine line. You can't fade him as a performer at all. At a certain point, he's just out there doing routines. He's out there just doing choreography.
He's a dancer. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Versus performing. So right. That's a fine line between bit. But what I see out there, the shit that he's doing is always like, it's a good show.
True.
Now, you know, I don't know. The unknown girl on the guitar, she was dope. Towards the end, she did a singer-songwriter joint, which kind of surprised everyone. Forget her name. Who else? Yeah.
What did you think about the Prodigy? I guess in recognition.
No, that's great. Okay. That was fine. What'd you think about the Fallen Stars tributes with El DeBarge and George Michael?
Am I hating? Okay. Am I mad at you were mad at that?
No, it's a couple notes. El DeBarge is a legend.
Legend.
So what about your boys, the Migos?
Man, are you talking about specifically the interview?
No, we'll get to that in a second. Okay. I'm talking about the performances, both the Khaled version, the Khaled thing with Weezy, Cuervo, and who else is up there? I don't remember, but
was it Chance?
No,
I don't know. Then
anyway, the Khaled performance to me,
yeah, I'm not really a fan of Migos. Period. So
well, okay.
It's like whatever.
All right. Yeah. Well, I'm a fan. I mean, I like the album a lot. I don't know that I love the. I really really like the album. I think it's for what it is, production wise and everything else. Like I think it's very serviceable. I actually enjoy the album a lot. When I see them perform the album, it is really extra, not the same thing, mm-hmm. because it's one of those cases. Where the album there is very, very produced, very, yeah. very, very produced, very auto-tuned, very yeah. produced, sounds mellow. It's like Metro Boomin. It's like really, Michael. They're really in there.
It's not for the stage, man.
For the stage, it's just like to come out.
They're
like,
not charismatic enough.
75 same color T-shirt.
Nah.
That's not happening. You know, it's like the lyrics don't lend themselves to just screaming. Mama told me, hey,
not
it. Maybe
for a smaller venue it works, but not for like an arena style venue.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
And the bigger the stage,
that's what I'm saying.
The bigger highlight how whack it is.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I was disappointed by that. I don't know what I expected, but that's definitely disappointed. Yeah. It wasn't as bad as a Katy Perry joint when they performed with Katy Perry, but anyway.
Yeah.
And then last but not least. Well, both the Chris Brown. What do you think about the Joe Budden situation? Academics.
I thought it was hilarious. Everything about it. The memes are crazy.
I haven't even got to the memes yet.
I mean, I'm not really a fan of Migos, so it's gonna sound very like I'm against them. But which is, hey, man, I kind of feel where Joe's going. Maybe how he did it was unprofessional.
Throw the mic down and get out.
It was very theatrical. But I get the point that he's making. It's like, yo, like, I think you guys are whack. Right. I have to do this. I really don't want to do this. And like, you're up here and you're not saying nothing. So like, I get it. And I mean, Joe Budden's always been that type of dude. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Very like vocal, very just opinionated and kind of like an asshole. Yeah. So, I mean, it's entertainment. Yeah. It's funny.
It was funny. Yeah.
And then you talking about the fight? The Chris Brown fight? Or
yeah.
Altercation?
Altercation.
Man, whatever, man.
Migos is, you know, I'm not mad at him, but the bloom is coming off the rose for this fan.
Man,
the smoke in the mirrors are starting to rear their head.
Yeah,
the more shine they get.
Yeah,
because you know, you shine light bright enough, you start to see no talent.
Exactly.
You know,
that's right.
And so it's kind of, you know.
Man, but, that's a crazy line. That's a bar right there.
Yeah, I mean, it's just you know. Anyway, congratulations. Oh, one last thing, Leslie Jones, yay, nay.
I would say yay, man. I'm gonna say yay.
All right. She has some problems.
Yeah,
she
has some moments too, though.
She has some moments. All the skits with the Roscoe's bit was hilarious.
Right.
She definitely has some moments.
Right.
I think the monologue was a little rough.
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
Anyway, but I'm glad she had the opportunity to do it. All right, let's get out of culture into the tech. We'll jump back to the culture. Google's all the news, man. Google's you know, got hit with a fine. You know, to basically to equal treatment for rival sites. They hit with a very it's a $2 billion. Fine,
right?
Which again, for Google, is couch cushion money.
Yeah, but it is the record of fines no, there's been no fine as large as this one for any company.
Yeah, it is. I mean, $2 billion fine is still two B's.
It's retarded.
But the fact that they can be like, eh.
All right, we'll pay it. Whatever.
Like, yeah. I don't know. I got no real thing to say.
I have something real to say about it. I think you know, a company that started from the bottom and has risen so largely based on, you know, gathering the information of the world and figuring out a way to monetize it. Mm-hmm. Like, now that they've done that and they cracked that code and they're able to now, you know, position themselves in other categories, like it's becoming a monopoly. And so that's kind of what this conversation and this fine is all about. It's like, okay, here are these smaller companies that want the same type of visibility in search that they're not getting because Google has ownership in other categories, and right, they're pushing their stuff forward. And they're saying that the first page of a search result is where most of the eyeballs and attention goes. And a lot of these smaller mid-level companies are like on the fourth page. So it's unfair. We can't compete. So, but is that Google's fault?
No.
They created that shit. They created the platform. Why shouldn't they push their own properties forward? Yeah. So I kind of feel it, but then also from the guy that's trying to like rise as well through the platform, like, it's almost impossible. So it's like, what happens?
It's just an interesting dynamic when you know, a business becomes so large that it becomes this huge part of the public, of society, of culture, right? Mm-hmm. So when you become a part of the very fabric of our culture and the very fabric of our society, not just domestically but globally, what responsibility do you hold? At a certain point, you're like, hey, man, I'm just a company. You know, it's like Facebook. Hey, we're just here pushing information around the users.
Yeah.
Don't mind me, I'm Zuckerberg. I mean, at a certain point, there's some responsibility there. So,
but what is the responsibility to say, hey, I own this, but I'm not gonna give my own company fair treatment because you're not as big as me? Okay, so
no,
I'm not gonna promote this company.
No one as big as you.
That's whose fault is that? I used to be you. I used to be the small guy.
Okay. Like, why don't you get your B's up? Don't get mad at me.
But that's not fair, man. All
right, I got, yeah.
I don't know, whatever.
It's very true. Again, it's more of a philosophical, moral question about where the responsibility lies when you get so big.
Yeah.
When you're that big and you are Google, you are essentially, you know, U.S. Steel, you know. Like, yeah, what are your responsibilities?
Yeah.
So I don't know. To that point.
But they're responsible for organizing the world's information. Like, no one's been able to do that. Like, when you want to search for something, you can immediately get it because of Google.
Yes.
No one else did that. That's their contribution to humanity in my book.
Right. So in exchange for that, we just smushed the guys. They make sure that no one else gets up.
Oh, man.
You're welcome. You're welcome, society. all right, I get it. Well, to that point, also, you know, Alphabet, a couple years ago, Google announced that they're forming a parent holding company, Alphabet, that's going to hold all other companies, including, you know, YouTube and Google and you know, everything else they've got going on. But there seems to be there are 11 separate, you know, things that they're working on. It seems to be harder for them to organize under Alphabet as harder than they anticipated. And the reason being is because partially what you're talking about is, you know, Google and YouTube aren't the same as other things they have, like Calico,
Nest,
and Nest. So I don't know. I mean, it's interesting.
I think it's ironic that, you know, like I just said on the last story, that, you know, Google is responsible for organizing the world's information, but they're having a challenge organizing themselves as a business.
Right.
It's like, you would think that, you know, they have the greatest minds, engineers, and business folks over there that can do it. But I mean, I guess they're struggling. But I mean, are they struggling? Like, they're making gobs of money. They're worth, they have over $60+ billion of just cash. So like, are they struggling? Is it a challenge? I don't know. I mean, I guess that's what the critics are saying, but I don't really see that. I see them scaling up still. I see them expanding more. So I don't know where the infrastructure issues are, but, you know, maybe that's something that will unfold more as we move in time.
Do you worry about sort of the Facebook, Google, Amazon problem of, and some degree Apple, but do you worry about, Amazon is making these moves now, but like, you have a company that is sort of, you know, builds and builds and builds and grows and stays pretty much in one industry, in that one industry, like, well, let's call it technology for lack of a better term. They're growing to the biggest giant in technology. They've made, like, whatever, $90 billion, $100 billion on that. At a certain point, once they keep growing, if they decide we're going to explode and just spread out and just, $90 billion, $100 billion, $200 billion, $300 billion, I'm going to buy everything. WAP! They just start buying stuff. Like, what? I mean, it's interesting. Like, how, I mean, I guess there's laws in place for that, but do you worry about companies getting too big? You see a lot of this Amazon. I was like, yeah, Washington Post, cool. Cool, I'll take that. Give me two of those, yeah. Like, space, let's do that. Like,
I mean, but everything that you're listing, all those are separate services. Deals. Those are separate deals. Like, if you buy it from me, like, it's T&C's, terms and conditions. I still might be the president. I still might be on the board. Like, so yeah, it might be under the umbrella of Amazon, under the umbrella of Alphabet, but like, all those things are have their own kind of terms and conditions. So, like, who's to say that I can't buy it? I have the cash. It's up for sale. Why can't I buy it? Why can't I buy the Clippers? Why can't, like, if I'm Steve Ballmer, why can't I buy whatever it is?
Yeah, you know? You want Steve Ballmer. He's rich. Speaking of which, there's an interesting thing that I heard. This is a side note, but it's about to speak to, like, tech and rich guys as well. There's an interesting conversation with my guy Malcolm Gladwell and Bill Simmons about Ballmer and about just the NBA in general, how most of the NBA is owned by these billionaire guys now, and how it's the system set up to where, see, Ballmer, if you want to, could just spin, pay the luxury tax, you know, and just do that.
He could.
Like, I'm doing that. And then the question is, why aren't more of these guys just doing that? Because, like, it's still, that's beyond couch cushion. That's like money that's like, He can go over the cap, spend luxury tax, and just go after everyone, overpay everyone every single year. And why don't these guys do that? And the interesting question, the interesting answer to that is, these guys are so competitive that they don't like to see, at the end of the year, when it says you lost X amount of dollars, like, they hate seeing that.
Of course.
And so it's almost like they hate seeing those negative numbers more than they hate spending the money.
It's all about perception. Because if they're spending money, if they're losing money, that suggests that they're not a good business person, or suggests that they don't have the pulse of the people, or that they're misfiring, they're making some mistakes. So yeah, I can see that. I can see how the ego could come into play. Well, I'm gonna be more strategic with this because you got the cash. Why not spend and get five franchise players?
I'm overpaid for LeBron, overpaid for everybody. And who cares? I'll pay the taxes. I'm going to win some rings.
Right.
I'm Steve Ballmer.
Right.
But
and look at the spreadsheet.
But look at the spreadsheet. It's like, damn, I'm negative.
Right.
You know, $45 billion per quarter.
Right.
Like, that's bullshit. and that's just interesting. Anyway, it's into the mindset of these guys. All right. California. I mean, Facebook. What's back to California law? California's proposing a law that's going to allow internet to young, sort of juvenile,
I love this,
incarcerated youth, and I think it's fantastic. And Facebook's all for it.
You think something Facebook is doing, my man.
I don't listen
again. I don't Mark, Joe gave you a point, bro.
I don't know the motives, but it's a good move, and I think it's good law. I think it's good that Facebook's backing it. I think the people opposed to this are just, I don't know, draconian. Like, what do they want? I mean, the idea being, look, you know, it's one of those things, it's the age-old question about incarceration. Are we there to punish, or are we there to rehabilitate?
Right.
And you know, it's a fine line for some, but if they're there to just punish, then get in the corner, don't ever come out, get in the hole. But if they're there to rehabilitate, then, you know, internet's information. Internet is a privilege. Some people are like, internet's a privilege. It's like, they can't be having an internet. That's too fun. It's information.
Yeah,
it's like a library. Yeah. So what do you think?
I totally agree with you. And also, like, we're not just talking about prison as a blanketed topic. We're talking about juveniles. We're talking about kids still.
Yeah.
You know. So, and the kids that will one day be back out, you know, in society. So yeah, to be able to have the internet, to be able to connect with their family, communicate with their support network, and to be able to, you know, further their education in the various forms that the internet offers, be it podcasts, be it, you know, editorial, be it imagery, be it videos, like all those things help to inspire and help to, you know, expand their sensibilities and viewpoints. And so being locked up in a room with no access to anything, how is that going to help them contribute to society when they get out? Right. So like, again, like you said, who would be opposed to that? I don't understand like what the argument would be for that. I can't see it.
People on the right. man, we're giving these kids a free pass. All they're going to do is listen to their rap music and look up World Star. I don't know.
But it costs more to keep someone in jail for a year than it costs to send them to college. Doesn't make any sense.
Well, for profit. I'm making money on it.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah, I want these kids going to college. They might want to vote me out.
Right.
All right. So we're all for that. In the biggest, you know, ho-hum news of all time, Facebook has reached 2 billion
say it,
users.
Bro. Say it, bro.
2 Bs. Now, there's only 7 billion on the planet.
Oh, yeah.
they got 2 billion users.
Right.
That is 7.3 on the planet.
Man.
They got 2 billion.
The stat said, from that article, there's a stat that said if it were 1924... Facebook would have 100% of the world population.
Wow.
I believe it was 2 billion people in 1924, so they would have everybody if it was that year.
Wow.
That's pretty crazy.
God, that's a big jump from 1924 to right now.
You talking about what? Almost 100 years we've grown 5 billion people?
God, another 100 years, the Earth won't take it.
Man.
We double that again?
Man.
For 14 billion people?
Man.
Resources.
Yeah.
Anyway, That's the interesting thing about it. Wow. The thing that strikes me about this the most, that's really the most remarkable thing, if you think back to almost 10 years ago now, the social network, you know, the Facebook movie came out, the David Fincher movie, the big billboard was like 500 million of your closest friends are 500 million. It was like 500 million? Facebook has 500 million users. This guy is 500 million. That's like chump change right now.
Man.
He's at 2 billion.
And it took him 5 years to grow from, it took him from 2012 to now, 5 years to grow from 1 billion to 2 billion. And I believe his objective is to be at, I think it's 5 billion by 2030, I believe. So, I mean, he's not stopping, bro. He's trying to have everybody on Facebook. And I think the plan for him to expand in remote areas with the whole balloon technology,
with the drones
and the balloons, to be able to offer internet and Facebook to, you know, remote places of the world. That's how he's going to get those other users. I mean, because I think it's crazy. A lot of people know about Facebook, but they may not be an active user or a user at all. So it's like those people are already like closed. That'll probably be you. But you're a user. You're signed up.
Yeah, you got me already. You got me.
You're in that 2 billion, my man.
Yeah. I don't know. And I said, good for you, Zuck.
And they already got Instagram. They have, what else do they have? They have Oculus Rift. There's another one they have. The what's the messaging one?
Oh, my goodness. WhatsApp.
Yeah, WhatsApp. They have that. So it's like a few more acquisitions. Who knows what they might have?
I'm saying, like, at some point, they might say, ha, we bought General Motors. And then we're going to buy the post office. And then we're buying, you know, whatever. I mean, you know,
right.
Who knows?
Right.
U.S. Steel. We're buying the coal. And who knows what they're going to buy?
Yeah.
Anyway, good for them. Good for Zach. Apple. Well, and actually, there's a new new podcast I'm listening to, another podcast. It's called Masters of Scale. It's from Reid Hoffman. Reid Hoffman is the former creator and CEO of LinkedIn, and very prolific investor who was an early investor on Facebook and Uber and a bunch of other ones. But he's called the Oracle of the Silicon Valley. He's probably the most prolific angel investor. And also, he started LinkedIn and grew LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
He's has a podcast now, believe it or not, and it's really well done. It's called Masters of Scale, where he goes in and talks to mostly Silicon Valley guys,
right,
but people who I've really heard deep dive interviews with.
Right.
One of them being in a two-parter with Zuckerberg.
Yeah. I actually listened to like 10 minutes of the first one. I have it on here as well.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I think it's very good. I just didn't finish, but I definitely would recommend it.
It's not bad. You get to hear Zuck talk a lot. I don't hear him talk that much. Yeah. I don't hear him talking that much.
Right.
And like, so I get to hear him really get into detail about how they grew Facebook and his philosophies and what he thinks. And it made me hate him less.
Yeah.
Made me hate him less. Didn't make me like him. Made me hate him less. No, I'm not mad at Zuck. I'm sure he means well. All right. Apple wants to hire someone to help Siri be hip with the times.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Number one, don't ever say that.
I just
in a headline. I'm not saying that. You're not saying that. Yeah. That was the headline.
Yeah. Hip with the times. They're gonna get some coaches in there.
Man.
I mean, the czar of cool is who they're hiring. They're already off to a bad start.
Seriously. To a bad start.
This is like, what was the intention?
So the intention, from my understanding, is that, okay, obviously, you know, with the whole home market expanding and having the AI within the home to be able to control, you know, or be able to be your personal assistant, like they want to make Siri more knowledgeable about what's happening culturally. So if it's festivals, if it's certain product releases or certain points of destination that are culturally significant, then Siri will kind of recommend them to you without you having to, I guess, ask her or inquiry it. So the thing is that to hire a person kind of like the ambassador of cool to be able to begin to program Siri to know these things. I don't know, man. What do you think about that?
Siri, put my Siri song. Playing My Ghost. Slipper Rye. Playing Bad and Boucher.
Oh my God.
By the My Ghost.
That's funny.
I mean, I guess they have to, you know. Yeah, I guess it's fine. I don't know how it manifests itself.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
You know, hey baby, I don't know what's Siri gonna be doing. Like, what's the new Siri gonna sound like?
My goodness.
Anyway, we'll soon find out. But yeah, Apple's spending a lot of money, a lot of attention to this AI. They're really, really doing. I'll be very interested to see when they unveil this new Siri, like how fresh it is, because they're spending a lot of money.
I hope it's game changing, because they're surely hyping it up.
I'm gonna skip this next one, but I'm gonna go to this BioRing. BioRing can replace your keys and your passports and everything. Basically, ring, wedding ring, otherwise you wear it all the time. You know, it's there, having all of your information in the one ring. It seems like a good idea until the fact that you can also be tracked with the ring. What if someone steals the ring? But I guess it's biometric because it only works on your finger. So I know.
And also, you have to have your fingerprint. You have to do something. You have to put your fingerprint in it.
Fingerprint, and so it's a match with your ring and thing. Exactly. Okay, I like it.
I don't know, man. I mean, I like the concept. I don't think the functionality of it, being that it's designed for the finger, I don't think that's smart. Because, well, at least me personally, I lose rings. I don't keep the ring on at all times. So, yeah. Obviously, you put it somewhere, you forget it, then what? You know, yep. So I think that part is, I think it would be more functional as a watch.
Yeah,
you know?
As a watch, more functional.
Versus the ring, but I don't know.
Well, people, yeah, I'm really bad with rings. I'm bad with rings. But it's also opposite for all the gangster movies you see when someone just like, snip!
Kiss the ring.
Yeah, and also like take the finger off and just be like,
exactly.
I got his whole bank account.
Right.
That's
true.
I don't want to have someone come up with me a pair of bolt cutters.
Man.
Like, hey, man.
Where's my money, dog?
Yeah. Like, I got the ring. Clack. I don't want that.
That's all bad.
Shifting gears. We talked about, you know, the Han Solo situation, the Lord Miller getting fired off Han Solo, but, you know, now some more details are out as to what happened. And, you know, I mean, I just want to get your take on whose side are you on here. I mean, it seems as if, you know, Lloyd Miller, who are very sort of like, you know, funny and prolific young directors who did the Lego Movie and 21 Jump Street and 22 Jump Street and got a couple TV shows.
Son of Zorn.
Big Deal with Fox.
Yep.
Both their shows abruptly canceled, though. Son of Zorn and Making History both canceled. But, you know, they seem to be out there doing stuff, and maybe some may argue maybe a little too much too soon. But because they kind of got all the keys to all the castles, and they made two good projects. You can argue that 22 Jump Street was just okay. Lego Movie was great, but then everything else is kind of being canceled and not well reviewed. They get into this huge movie of Star Wars, Han Solo, with Kathleen Kennedy, who's probably the, you know, producers who's produced hundreds of movies. That include most Steven Spielberg's everything. She's worked with every top director who's ever directed, from Zemeckis to Spielberg to everybody. She knows what the heck she's doing. She's running Lucasfilm. She understands everything else, and she's looking at these guys like, these guys don't have it. You know, the story talks about how, You know, they're coming in and setting up one, you know, one shot. So we 15 different angles. They decided to do two. They land two of those setups. They land
burning money.
Couple done. They're starting at one. They're improv-ing on the side. They have 200 crew members sitting around waiting with it while they're in the cockpit goofing around. Mm-mm. Like,
it's all bad.
Lawrence Kasdan, who basically didn't create Han Solo, but basically made Han Solo what he is in Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, wrote this movie himself. It's a very clear vision. They're like, yeah, Lawrence Kasdan.
Improv that.
I don't know, man. I mean, I'm kind of siding with Kathleen Kennedy on this. What do you think?
I'm definitely siding with Kathleen Kennedy on this. A movie of this importance, a movie of this scale, size, like you can't fuck around with this type of stuff. It's not like some little TV show where you can bring your style. I get when they hire you, they want your sensibilities, your auteurship, but I mean, at the end of the day, it's about the money. You know, we have this budget, and you have a schedule. So if you're scheduled to shoot 14 shots, and you're only getting less than a fifth of those shots, like, dude, you're killing the budget. And you're not, as the director, you are the head honcho. You're supposed to be making sure everybody knows their position and place and that everything works seamlessly. And if everyone's questioning your leadership and authority, that's a problem.
Yeah, it's a huge problem. Not only that.
And it's two of you? Like, come on.
It's two of you. And not only that, it's kind of like the idea that it's Lucasfilm, it's Marvel, it's Disney. There's unlimited money back there, and there may be, but it doesn't mean you get to just set it on fire.
No, not at all.
So.
And there's a brand of excellence, and so like, why are we going to take this risk with you, like when it's an unknown?
Yep.
You haven't had a movie of this scale.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely on her side.
So do you think Lloyd Miller will recover?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I mean, who's going to hire them? Because Kathleen Kennedy is a big Don John. I don't think she's going to blackball her, but it's
this is bad news. This will stay on your record.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean,
will they ever get a big, you know...
This is a body.
$200 million movie again?
Man. I mean...
They got projects in the works already. They got Lego movies coming. They got other stuff coming, but still.
I think it's damaging.
If they don't have a hit, if their next movie isn't a hit...
Oh, yeah.
It might be curtains for Lloyd.
As a duo, they might have to break it up.
Yeah, because especially because they didn't even have a TV hit yet.
Man.
Three TV projects. Crash and burn. Yeah. So, speaking of excellence, our boy Sean Carter, we are 3 days away, 2 days away, from the new Jay-Z record, and he dropped another kind of a trailer, Kill Jay-Z, with a young black man running,
mm-hmm.
presumably for his life. You zoom out, he's a T-shirt that says "Stay Black." I don't know, man. I'm all in.
I love it.
I'm all in.
I love it. Let's work.
I mean, I don't know what Jay-Z's about to do.
Let's work.
But he's definitely coming with some art and some conversations.
Some thoughtfulness, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's, I've been waiting for, and I'm not even going to project what it could be or what statement it's going to make, but I love how he's rolling this out. I'll just put it like that.
Yeah, so the rollout's always good.
Yeah.
He's got the Sprint behind it, you know. Sign up for Sprint, you get 6 months of title hi-fi. So he's got that going on. He's got something. He has someone else attached. We got two major companies attached to the rollout. You know, do you think it'll be any good? Is the question.
I definitely think it'll be good. I think he, like we talked about last week, you know, the accompanying visuals obviously help to support the success rate of it. I think that, like I said last week as well, I'm interested to see if it's going to be collaboration heavy or if it's just mostly him, what type of narrative it is, like how the album is sequenced, is he telling a story, like what type of vibe and mood is it, all those things come into play.
How many tracks, yeah.
But I mean, just in terms of what I know of where he is based on, you know, looking at his footprints, like I think him and Beyonce, they're trying to make some more politicized statements with their art, and so I think that this record will be full of those type of gems.
Yeah.
I hope it's more street too. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, that's a question. Can you have both
gems? And like I think you can.
I think you can too. But yeah. Like, I mean, can you make a street album that's also political album that's also a culturally significant album?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you can make the argument that.
Kendrick?
Illmatic. Kendrick. Oh, yeah. Kendrick's done it. Illmatic. Yeah. Actually, Kendrick's a good example.
Yeah. J. Cole?
J. Cole does it. I think that Kendrick and J. Cole arguably are missing a little levity on there. I mean, just when you think of them, you don't think of, like, you know, those are some fun guys to goof around with. You think of just some seriousness. Kendrick especially has got this new... I mean, the thing he needs now is more fun.
Man, well, speaking of Kendrick, not to segue, did you see the last video? The video that just dropped?
No.
With the Gordon Parks references?
No.
Oh, you got to peep that offline. This is awesome.
Right. It's freaking, a Kendrick video?
Yeah, it's freaking awesome.
Kendrick's videos are ridiculous, by the way.
Like, I mean, like, they're literally taking Gordon Parks imagery and recreating them in the video.
Oh, it's dope.
Yeah, wow. I mean, something that I would have wished to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they beat you to it.
They beat me to it. It's fresh.
All right. Speaking of hopefully fresh, Matt Reeves is doing, director Matt Reeves, who I really like, is doing a press for War of the Planet of the Apes, which I'm very excited about. I mean, you know, also a very interesting thing, because you kind of know how it ends. You know, Planet of the Apes, you know the apes are going to win, but somehow you're still invested in the whole process. I've watched 3 movies now with the apes, 2 movies, and I'm very invested in it, which is a very, very difficult, interesting feat to pull off. But he's also helming the Batman movies. He's the one that's sort of handpicked by Warner Brothers and Ben Affleck himself. After Ben said, I'm not going to do it. I'm stepping down, but I'm going to get my boy Matt, and he's capable. And Matt's talking about now how he really wants to make it noir-heavy, noir-driven, and I'm excited.
Yeah, I love that. I love him taking the perspective of, hey, I want the audience to really be a part of the makeup of the character and tell the story through, you know, the eyes of the character.
Yeah.
Even how it, you know, how it's positioned, how it's framed, how the story unfolds. Like, I love how he's communicating that. I like to see how that actually looks on screen, but to see Batman through a different perspective or through his perspective, I think would be super fresh.
I also like how he's making the comparisons of Caesar, his main protagonist, in Andy Serkis's character, if you will, in Apes. You know, sort of this troubled person, who reluctant hero, who reluctantly has all the weight of the world on his shoulders, who has to do, you know, what he has to do, even if it's sort of morally ambiguous to where his code is. I like all that stuff.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Batman's a very complicated character. It's like, you know, I mean, Christopher Nolan nailed it a couple times, but maybe lost it a little bit in the third one. Mm. Really nailed it in the second one. Mm. But I think Christopher Nolan, of all things, nailed Joker. Keith Ledger, no joke. But I think
killer.
I think Batman Returns is just a masterpiece.
Masterpiece, without question.
That movie is. I mean, I don't know. I mean, the first and the third one's a little got problems. First one, good.
Mm-hmm.
The second one, man,
solid.
Okay. Last but not least, Super Nintendo is finally getting the miniature console.
Right. We just talked about this last week.
Yeah, we're talking about the
they dropped NES. One. They dropped it. Well, they dropped the information, I think, on Monday.
The Super NES is coming. Exactly. I was never an NES guy, so it didn't bother me. But what do you think about this?
I mean, again, it's like what we talked about with Atari. It's for the nostalgia of it. It's like, okay, I can have this hardware that, you know, reminds me of my younger days.
Yep.
And I can play some of these classic games that, you know, I grew up on. I think that's and it's a cash cow for them. Like, okay, we're gonna release maybe 100,000, and that's it. And we'll build the PR around it and get the attention from it and probably do something again for the holidays next year.
Is there a long game for this? Are they getting money from us in preparation for one console that has all of the?
I'm sure they are.
Like the Super NES
has everything.
Right. It's got the cube. It's got everything.
Right, right. We've already bought all of them.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, like, because I wonder if they're setting us up for something.
They have to be. I mean, because what is the long game strategy?
What's the point of like releasing 100,000 and be like just watching everybody go over frenzy?
Right.
And if you're Nintendo, I'm like,
that's a very good point.
They got money. They can manufacture as many as they want.
That's a very good point.
So,
but I say for the person that wants to stand in line at 3 a.m. and grab three of them. And then resell them on eBay for triple the price. Like it's a money opportunity for the huge gamer or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
There's that clown on this picture, that guy on Twitter online who's got the Super NES, the first version. He's got what looks like 30 of them stacked in a pyramid. And he's like, I'm like, get out of here!
Right.
You're like the most hated man online right now.
Man.
I'm like, come see me, get at me. you want these Nintendos?
Man, slinging Nintendo.
Yeah. So you could be that guy and go snatch up a bunch. But anyway, it'd be funny if they like tell people go snatch up a bunch and they don't release 100,000, they make them readily available.
Right,
people just stuck, like, with these things that are worth $40. Anyway, that's it for today. I do want to mention that I did have the opportunity to go see Baby Driver last night.
I'm out of here, bro.
This
man has not seen All Eyes on Me, but he went to go see Baby Driver.
Baby Driver is the slick.
No, I've seen. I mean, I haven't seen it, but I've heard great things.
I do gotta see Baby Driver. Although I didn't pay. In all fairness, I didn't pay for this one. But how's Jamie in there? Jamie's good in it. Yeah. I'm a little. The bloom's come off the Jamie Foxx rose for me as of late, in general. I'm a little. I think
he's falling off a bit.
It's falling off. I don't know if it's like. I don't know. I can't quite put my finger on it, but it's his public appearances. Aren't that great? Like, something's weird. Like, it's almost like he's phoning it in. Like, I know how to do this, but he really doesn't. You know, it's a weird thing. Like, and then his Shazam is not good. And then
really, you didn't like it?
I just didn't like the game itself and the concept is.
I'm not talking about him as a host.
The first one. Okay. The first one was definitely rough. He had prompt issues. It was edited to an intimate life. Timing was off. You can tell he was not comfortable, and he does not reprompt her. And it just wasn't good.
Right.
Now, has it gotten better? I don't know. So, is the game okay? Sure. I don't know. But he's good in this. He's good in this. Spacey, you know, bloated Kevin Spacey, smug and doing his thing. He's actually good. Hambone, John Hamm is actually really dope in this. The lead, the kid from Follow Our Stars, he's dope. And Edgar Wright, who I think gets a little too cutesy at sometimes. I'm a fan of his. I think he's an amazing filmmaker. I think that he gets a little too, you know, as our British friends say, a little too clever for his own good. He's a little too clever. But he got really clever with this one, and it actually worked. Hmm. You know, music cuts, and the whole thing's set to music. So it's almost like a musical, but it's not. The edits are like Guy Ritchie style.
Like a musical or like a music video?
That's good, like a music video. Okay. It's more like it. Right. So we're like cues.
It's like stylized, cues. Right?
Stylized, like gunshot hits on beats. Ba 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 ba. You know, like tire screeches on guitar riffs. And, you know, just stuff like that. Right. Very well done. Very well cut. A lot of long takes. A lot of long scenes. Some of the best car chases and car action that I've seen. Fast and the Furious included.
Hmm.
And one of the best foot chases I've seen.
Wow.
And it's a good foot chase is hard to do these days, and it's a good foot chase.
That's what's up.
That's all.
Yeah, I definitely want to peep that. Did you get a chance to... Are you into Power?
Season 4.
Okay.
Not watching it? No, I haven't watched it.
Oh, you haven't watched
it? What am I missing?
Oh, no. I was just saying if you were a fan or if you were into the series.
Not at all. I just saw that season 4 came. Yeah, I was exactly. Like, oh. Hey. But I thought, like, season 4... I'm not watching. Is it good?
I mean, I just barely started, to be honest. I'm only on season 1, episode 2.
Okay.
But everyone's telling me, like, you're tripping, Akili. Like, this is the dope show. Like, you are tripping.
But we must be tripping because it's on season 4.
Right.
And I haven't seen an episode.
Right.
So, okay, I'll follow you later.
Yeah.
I'm going to let you get, like, 4 episodes ahead of me and then tell me.
Okay.
But as of right now, I'm kind of like, I don't know.
Hey.
4 seasons on Stars. Okay. That's all I got. Anything else?
That's all I got, man. Where can they find you, bro?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Joe K. Braswell. Can the people find you?
They can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Akili Shine, AKILISHINE.
Cool. That's it. We will see you next week with some more reviews. Have a good holiday. We'll see you soon.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio. Instagram me at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in. The views expressed here are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.